always puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time now for Abandoned Manitoba, where we check in once again with Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Keisha.
Now, tell me again, what are we discussing this week?
Well, every so often, I like to switch things up by considering other aspects of abandonment. In past episodes of Abandoned Manitoba, we have looked at things like abandoned mail, abandoned voting methods, and abandoned cultural practices such as charivari, burial of the dead, and temperance. Today, we're looking at an abandoned ritual that was legendary, at least among members of the Winnipeg Press Club, an event called Beer and Skits that went on annually for 72 years.
And what is the Winnipeg Press Club?
Well, a young journalist such as you, Keisha, can be excused for not knowing about this Winnipeg institution. Essentially, it was a private social club for anyone affiliated with media. The Winnipeg Press Club was, in fact, Canada's oldest media club, founded in 1887.
Okay, so you say media. So what exactly do you mean? Who exactly could be members of this special club?
Well, as you might imagine, if we go back all the way to 1887, initially all its members were newspaper men. Emphasis on men. And only on the men involved directly in reporting the news. The men who operated the printing presses for the newspaper, for example, or the men who sold advertising in it, they were excluded. They couldn't be members. Female journalists were not especially common in those very early days, but they did begin to appear in the early 20th century. They were excluded too. Instead, they formed something called the Winnipeg Women's Press Club in 1912, and they couldn't join the Winnipeg Press Club until 1970, decades later. Meanwhile, if we go back to 1947, the club did relax its criteria slightly to allow radio and TV broadcasters to join. In other words, it wasn't just newspaper men anymore. Interestingly, in later years, the club relaxed its requirements for media experience altogether. So in 1966, for example, the president of the club was a provincial court judge who, as far as I can tell, never worked as a journalist. But the judge was a man.
Okay, but he was a man. So they have their little places where they make exceptions. Now I'm wondering, where was the club located?
Well, from 1887 to 1890, the club met in the Winnipeg City Hall. Not sure why that would make sense, but that's where they met. It moved around for much of the early 20th century until in 1953, it opened its first dedicated club room and bar. Notice the "and bar" part in a now demolished building near the corner of Portage and Main. The bar, by the way, was on a floor above the club room. And in fact, it was a kind of like a built-in sobriety test. If you could not climb 61 steps to the bar, well, you had had enough beer. For 47 years, from 1961 to 2008, the press club had its headquarters in the Marlborough Hotel, in various places within the building. In 1972, for example, it occupied the mezzanine level. And in fact, when they had the official opening ceremonies for their new digs, the guest was, in fact, Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau. And he performed a ritual christening by spilling beer on the floor. I imagine it wasn't the first beer that had gotten spilled on the floor, but Pierre Trudeau was spilling it from an engraved mug that he'd been presented by the club. In its final years, the club left the Marlborough and became nomadic. As near as I can determine, the club is now mostly defunct, and a collection of its records have been deposited in the University of Manitoba archives. But I first learned about the rich history of the Winnipeg Press Club, including about beer and skits, when the Manitoba Historical Society collaborated with several journalists to publish an entire issue of our magazine, Manitoba History, about the club.
Okay, I'm intrigued. So what is beer and skits?
Well, it started in 1933, and it was known initially as the Press Club Smoker, I guess because they all sat around drinking beer and smoking. It was renamed Beer and Skits in 1945. For its first 50 years, until 1983, it was open to men only, in the cast, in the crew, and in the audience. It was essentially a once-a-year show of short plays acted out by journalists that involved political and social commentary and comedy, frequently lampooning members of the political and business elite in Winnipeg. I found an article about the Beer and Skits from 1988, and it had a wonderful description. I'd just like to read you. It said, Beer and Skits was noisy and it was disrespectful. It was denounced from pulpits and by women's groups, but it carried on unheeding. In time, ridicule in Beer and Skits came to be seen by politicians and others in public life as a stamp of approval. If Beer and Skits ignored you, it was possible that you had failed to make a mark as mayor, alderman, or judge. At Beer and Skits, it was a pleasure to be roasted. The pain could always be eased in an ocean of cold beer.
And I'm sure it was. So that is where the beer became part of its name.
Yes. They did have a rule, though, that said actors and crew could not drink until after the show. The audience could, but because they had to be sort of paying attention, they couldn't drink until they were finished. However, I'm told that this rule was routinely flaunted. And again, I quote that 1988 article. It said, someone in the crew always passed out 15 minutes before curtain time and had to be rushed to a cold shower. I have seen actors emerge from a shower, deliver letter-perfect performances, then pass out with applause ringing in their ears.
Now, how did Beer and Skits even get started in the first place?
Well, it's widely acknowledged that it was the creation of drama critic Nathan Zimmerman. He joined the editorial staff of the Winnipeg Tribune in 1924, and he worked there until his sudden death, incidentally, just before the opening of Beer and Skits in 1951. He is said to have set down its operating rules: no smut, no religion, and no women. But the no woman rule was sidestepped just 3 years later, 1936, and regularly thereafter by having male journalists appear in drag. Real women became part of the show in 1984, even though they were permitted to be press club members 14 years earlier. They could sit in the audience, but they could not participate for 14 years. A similar prohibition against harsh language was broken in 1975. When the F-bomb was uttered on stage.
Oopsie-daisy. Beer and Skits sounds like it was very provocative.
Yes, and it was not just the performances that were controversial, but also the programs that accompanied, you know, the documents that said, you know, what was coming up, what skits were going to be performed. I borrowed several of these programs while we were preparing articles on the history of the press club, and numerous advertisements in the programs made my jaw drop. You know, normally staid conservative companies like Eaton's, the Manitoba Telephone System, Manitoba Hydro, Canada Post, and others had really risque advertisements in the program that I suspect would have elicited angry feedback from their customers if the ads had been made public. You know, so I thought I'd try to explain one of them here just to give you a sort of a sense of it. And I've picked one of the less racy ones, just so you know. An ad by the Keevil Brewery from the 1970s featured two icy bottles of its White Seal beer with a brassiere laying between them. And it was accompanied by the tagline, "The best topless ad in town."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Starting in 1970, the program even featured a Playboy-style centerfold in its middle. So really, wow. You know, for the boys.
Well, yeah, I guess that's why nobody else was included. Now, When did Beer and Skits end?
Well, I'm told that through the 1990s, it became increasingly difficult, perhaps because of the controversial content, to recruit well-known media people to perform. The scarcity of noteworthy performers, in turn, led to a decline in attendance. I guess, you know, people would look to see who they were going to see make a fool of themselves before they decided if they want to go. Another reason that was given for the decline of Beer and Skits through the 90s was the growing availability of edgy sketch comedy elsewhere, you know, programs like Saturday Night Live. The final production of Beer and Skits occurred in 2005, you know, 17 years ago. But I do have reminders of it in my personal collection of historical artifacts.
What are those artifacts?
I have a commemorative beer mug. I mean, what better for beer and skits than a beer mug? And this one is from 1972. Now, aside from being useful for drinking beer, the mug is important from an historical perspective because it reminds me of a time when sensitivity to the feelings of others was not as well honed as I think it is today. And also because I would have never been allowed to own this mug when it was first made. My mother was dead set against drinking, especially by people under 18. And Mum would have been horrified to see a 13-year-old like me holding a beer mug. You know, those racy programs, although horribly insensitive by the standards of today, are a useful way to gauge how our attitudes have changed. You know, they were politically incorrect in the 1970s, and they are even more so today. I'd like to think that means we have changed, and we're now a more tolerant, inclusive society. That, I think, is really the benefit of history, is to remind you when things were different than they are today.
Absolutely, Gordon, and thank you for that reminder. Now, can you give us a hint about next week's episode?
When you talk about abandonment like we do here, it's inevitable that the status of things changes with time. So next week, we have a bunch of updates to share. Some of them are good. Some of them, unfortunately, aren't so good.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Gordon.
Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons ago.